Hello.
Hey.
You're listening to Peninsula Obscura. I'm Karina Kolb.
And I'm Rachel Peacock.
This is a podcast about the strange and unusual state of Florida.
We'll talk about Florida's weird history,
paranormal activity,
and of course, true crime.
Each week, one of us researches a topic, and then we talk about it in depth.
Let's dive in. How's our,
been a while.
How's everybody? How's our favorite listeners?
Thanks. Thank you for your patience. Sorry we missed 2 weeks.
Yeah, we've...
It's hard.
Life is hard. Life is hard, and we've missed you guys, even though we don't really interact with you other than the emails that you send or the shout-outs you give or the text messages we receive from people we know that are like telling us that we're doing something cool, which we are really grateful for. And yeah, these times are kind of crazy. Topsy-turvy.
But yeah, we're back. I think we're gonna basically starting now. The summer is beginning for us, and it's gonna be a lot chiller at work, and at this point we're gonna try and get right back on schedule.
Yes,
back to weekly episodes.
Yes,
I say that optimistically.
We kind of write our own schedule, or we create our own schedule, so
yeah, exactly.
It's good to talk about the things that you would love to do right now if you could. Like, what is one thing that you wish you could do right now, Karina, or that you miss from when, before all this happened?
I miss hanging out with my friends in person. Yeah, definitely.
I feel that.
Going out to eat. I'm a big fan of going out to eat. We have some really incredible local restaurants. And I've been getting takeout to hopefully support people, but I know it's really hard.
Yeah.
So I miss that.
I ditto on all of that. yeah, I miss recording with you in person, Karina. It's weird. We only talk on Zoom these days.
I know.
But we still talk a lot, so that's good.
Yeah.
With all of those things that you said, I guess I could say that I also want to really go wander around Home Goods like I used to, and like TJ Maxx, and just try on things that are ugly or like you think are going to be cute and that aren't. And then it's just the idea of the ability to actually do that, and also sniffing candles, because I'm one of those weirdo people.
Sniffing candles.
You never do that?
No, I definitely do that. I definitely do that. I tend to get a lot of candles, oddly, from Joanne Fabrics.
I should look there next time.
Joanne Fabrics is bomb. Fuck Hobby Lobby.
Yeah, I feel that.
that is actually like a very like nice little comforting retail experience, is shopping for candles.
Yep, and just perusing the aisles and looking for like, I don't know, a good deal. I love it. But can't do that. And I think it's kind of an idea of being restricted, even though we are so blessed and lucky that we have all this other stuff that we can be grateful for. And this certain way of life has become relatable to, I think, universally. Everyone is going to look back on this experience and go, oh, well, remember when this happened? And with many of us confined to our homes and some of us cramped with our families and friends, some of us, I'm alone, but you know, I'm thriving. I'm loving it. It's funny that this theme of being, I guess, constricted, but more so restricted to what you're doing in your day-to-day basis, you're not as free to go about and do things. It kind of relates to the Florida story that I'm going to talk about in this episode, because the research that I did for it kind of sparked a lot of questions in my head and thoughts. It provoked a lot of thought about how this story starts and ends with this feeling of being stuck. Now, of course, this story is much wilder and more dangerous than what most of us have going on currently, but
Oh, really?
Yes, but I invite everyone to reflect on these feelings of being trapped, at least at a basic level. So let's get to the history of what I'm talking about. Let's take it back now, y'all.
We'll start saying that every time we go, we do an episode about Florida history. We'll have to reference the cha-cha slide.
Yes, we're
it's very relevant.
We're keeping it relevant with the kids.
Keeping it real. I thought you were going to say we're keeping it real.
We don't know TikTok dances, but we know the cha-cha slide. Oh, Karina, are you
doing No, just kidding. I am absolutely 100% not doing TikTok dances.
That was like going to be the shock of my life, because I just never would have. I feel like people that are doing TikToks, they just are sharing it with everyone, which is great. I think it's a great platform. It's just I never have been feeling the need to do that. If I was maybe younger or in a different mindset, maybe I would have joined TikTok. And I appreciate the ones that I see, like, much later. Anyways, we're getting off topic now. We're off topic.
Anyways, let's go back into Florida history.
Yep.
And hear about this this story, this dangerous story that you're about to tell us.
Yep. So it's 1935, and we're in Florida. Wouldn't you know, this podcast about Florida and we're in Florida. This little town called Ocklawaha, which, yes, I looked up the pronunciation of that.
Nice. You gotta do it.
The pronunciation is not a word, but enunciation, I meant.
No, you did. You had it right.
Pronunciation.
Oh, wait, fuck.
Yeah, you see what I mean? I'm making up words.
How to pronounce? Enunciation isn't right either.
I just invented the word pronunciation.
Pronunciation is not a word. Pronunciation is the word you're looking
pronunciation.
For.
I was just pronouncing it wrong.
Exactly. You need to learn the pronunciation of pronunciation.
Okay. Anyway, well. Okay. Yeah. Here we are. All right. Here we are.
So it's in Ocklawaha.
Ocklawaha.
Oh my god, I got it so close. Yes. Just pulled that off the top of my head.
Good job. You did good. And that means I did my job well.
Yeah.
So Ocklawaha, Florida. It is very close to where Karina and I are, just south of Ocala. So it is on the north shore of Lake Ware. It is Lake Ware. Where?
Oh! I'm being cute. I missed it.
I missed it. I really thought you didn't hear where it was, huh? Oh, God. Right. We're going to use that joke throughout this episode, hopefully. It's been advertised. I read this on a website that is like a town's website talking about the history. So maybe it's a little biased, but I love the fact that they say that it's advertised as Florida's friendliest hometown. Okay. I'm pretty sure all hometowns like call themselves that, even though it's not always true.
Yeah, especially not in Florida.
Hate
to say it.
Anyways, on the edge of Lake Ware, a typical two-story home sits. Nothing about this house is out of the ordinary. It's a friendly-looking home, painted white, and it has a shingled roof, green-trimmed windows, and a screened in front porch. It's a typical Florida homestead, yet it has become home to one of the most notable historical events in this tiny town of Ocklawaha. Karina, I'm going to show you if you can see this picture of this house, and you can vouch for me.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, it looks like a classic. I believe the term is a cracker style house. Mm-hmm. That's, I don't know if that's politically correct or not, but that's certainly what they're called, with the screened in porch. Definitely looks historical.
Yep. It's cute. Very old. I think this was built shortly before, probably within 5 or 10 years before 1935. However, this house became significant the day that some renters moved in. You see, like us, these occupants were practicing social distancing. They were limiting contact with others, yet they weren't separating themselves from society in fear of catching deadly viruses. These occupants were hiding from society for a violently different reason. The occupants of this home were a mother and son. And in the early hours of the morning on January 16th, 1935, they became unknowingly surrounded by something they feared most. Dun, dun, dun.
What?
Roughly 5 a.m., vehicles filled with a team of agents arrived at the house, parking and preparing for the worst. The mother and adult son inside were considered dangerous and wanted by the FBI. And a man named Earl Connolly was leading an ambush to take them into custody. The agents called out to them, demanding their surrender. So they've got their guns pointed at the house. And the agents stood there ready, listening for a response. Nearly 15 minutes of silence passed, and the agents called out once again. Nothing. That's when they implemented their next step in the plan to extract these fugitives from the home. Tear gas grenades were shot into the windows of the home, and that is when the silence broke from within the house. It is said the words, "All right, go ahead," rang from the house, and a cascade of machine gun bullets shot down from an upstairs window.
Oh my God. I can picture it. I'm glad you showed me the house because I can picture it so vividly. Look at the Instagram to see the picture because, wow, yeah. It's like a old Western style.
Yep.
It's an outlaw shootout. It's
a big old shootout happening between the FBI agents and the fugitives. So, this is 1935. So just picture it, old-timey FBI agents like standing outside.
Since it's the 30s, you know, I'm picturing fugitives as having like bowler hats and Tommy guns.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And since it's Florida, I do picture the agents having cowboy hats still because they still wear cowboy hats to this day.
Hey, why not? Like,
ties and white button-up shirts and tweed trousers.
Yeah, I don't know what they were actually wearing, but I love the description you're giving, and I want to keep that.
Yeah.
So intermittently, there was shots being fired from the house and the agents firing back. Now, the crazier part about this, where I tried to find like someone, because there's been a lot of claims that this is the longest shootout in FBI history.
Oh.
But I can't prove that because I couldn't find any material. Maybe I just missed the wrong article. However, the shootout happened from 5 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. And some sources say it lasted till 11:30, but it could have been exact. It could have exactly when it ended and when it started. This is 1935. They're not like, they don't have a timer on. They don't have digital watches where they can, you know.
Right. That's a rough estimate.
Just imagine hours of this shootout.
Considering there's only two people in that house?
Yes. They didn't know at the time. That's how crazy. Many people, but they knew that those two people were in there. it is said that because this lasted so long that some people came to like watch. So like locals came by and were like having their breakfast and watching and just having watching it happen. I mean, it's probably the most exciting thing that this town has ever seen and will see.
I mean, if that happened right now, it would be the most exciting thing.
Yeah,
it's ever happened.
Big news. Big
in,
news
in our town. So, holy
yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, it was wild. When the firing had finally ceased, the silence returned, and this let the agents free to enter the home. And so the agents were like, I don't know if I should go in there because they could be just still alive. They couldn't tell. They didn't have wires planted in the house or anything. They don't have all the strategy, and they haven't learned all of the proper technology because it wasn't invented yet to figure.
Sure, yeah.
So they are like, okay, let's get the former owner of the home to I guess it's still the owner of the home. These people were
right,
renting
rented.
It. Yeah. So this guy is the owner. Well, he met these people that rented the home, and he didn't know they were fugitives. They introduced themselves under a different name, and mm-hmm. he goes upstairs inside the house to see who's in there and what's happened. And essentially, there was bullet holes everywhere in the walls, in the furniture, and like I said, in the upstairs. He went up to the upstairs bedroom where all these like shots were being fired, and they found the two fugitives deceased.
Wow. So they went out guns a-blazing.
So
that's crazy. But it took 5 hours to kill them.
It just was like, I feel like there was strategy, but also not that much strategy involved other than just ambushing.
Just shoot nonstop.
To shoot until they drop.
For 5 fucking hours.
If they shoot, we shoot back. Because I can imagine like the FBI agents being like, okay, they must be dead. And then like 2 minutes later, they hear more and they're like, oh, nope. Like just for hours and hours.
I know, that's crazy. Why didn't they storm in?
I don't know. I guess that wasn't policy.
I don't know how it works.
I don't know either. I'm pretty sure they have like a strategy now to storm in on people. And you always see it on TV and movies of being depicted for the FBI and agents of that sort, you know. But nowadays, this is just like a free-for-all. The Great Depression era, like shit, where people are just against the cops, against the agents. Doesn't matter. Staying back, it's shooting. So they found Fred Barker dead from many gunshot wounds. His mother, Ma Barker, was dead to an apparent single gunshot wound. And it's said that she was holding a Tommy gun, but other sources say that it was laid between them. Mm-mm. Now, of course, I'm going to get into a little bit more about these fugitives and why they were so wanted by the FBI and what they actually did to make them, you know,
get themselves into a 5-hour shootout.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And how old was these people? Like a mother and a son. So like an old lady.
This mother was about 61 when she took the bullet.
Okay. Wow.
and then the son, one of her sons, Fred, with her, was about 36. So the son was pretty young and yeah.
That's crazy. I mean, like, that's not full ass like old lady mode, but that's, you know, 61. That's not the usual age of a outlaw.
I know.
I would say.
Yeah, exactly. The Barkers, this mother and son. What is this? Why are they
why are they
shooting the FBI? Why are they hiding in Florida? There are oh so many things that happened within this family that were bad, but I will give a short summary. Most of it happens in the Midwest, so just know that most of these things happen in Missouri, Kansas, Oklahoma around the 1920s to 1935.
Got it. That's like in my mind like quintessential, you know, 30s bank robbers.
Yep.
Like all around the Midwest, around Chicago.
Yep.
Going through the desert and, oh my God.
Okay. You're all right. You're right on the money. This little family, the Barkers, I'm going to tell you a little more context to their lives. Ma Barker was known as Kate Barker. And, oh, she's also known as this. And she had four sons, all of which were criminals.
Huh.
She had Herman, Lloyd, Arthur, and of course Fred, which we know the end of the story for him. But let's get to the beginning stuff. Her husband, so Ma's husband, and her son's father, George Barker, was with Ma for a while. And this is a lot of history, so I'm kind of condensing it all and trying to give just little updates on a lot of this stuff. But totally. They were together for a while, and essentially the father left the picture. He either got kicked out, or he himself decided that it was time to get out of this crazy family. And nobody really knows what happened there other than that he was poof gone. But this is a bit of the stuff that happened before he left. Now, Herman was the oldest son, and he was in some sort of altercation with the cops after he was involved in a bank robbery, and he ended up shooting an officer in the face. And as he was getting away, he committed suicide, and he did that because he wanted to avoid conviction after he had crashed a car he was driving. Now, meanwhile, all these other kids, they're not just like trying to do the right thing either. They are also in prison. So
a little bit of a family business.
Kind of, yeah. So like, I guess the older son might have like been like, let's do it. Because there's no really indication that Ma was like, oh, go do this. Go rob right. some banks. Maybe there was some poverty motivation there because they wanted money and most of them were illiterate. They're pretty
but
much...
also, like, what are the odds that they're all doing it and the mom is not, like, involved in any way, you know?
Yeah, so, like, that's where I think I'm going to talk a lot about that in this episode because it is very strange. Like, the fact that all of these kids, all of these sons got into such dark, I guess these are professions to be criminals.
Criminal professions.
Repeat criminals, not just the one-time thing, and end up arrested and in prison at very early stage in their lives. So, you know.
Yeah.
There is some speculation that George, their father, disagreed with his son's decisions to do all these bad things, and he wanted to be like out of the picture, but he also wanted to be given their assets if they were to die. So it was kind of sketchy in that sense, where he was like, I don't care what you're doing, but I'll still get the benefit of what you're doing, almost.
Right.
And then the mother, so Ma, she remained faithful to her children. So these are her babies. Like, this is no matter what they do, they're not going to do anything wrong kind of mentality. Mm-hmm. And she always worked to get her sons exonerated, even if they were completely guilty for committing these horrible crimes. After George was out of her life, Ma was left alone, like I said a little earlier. She had one son dead and three in prison. Now, this spanned from 1928 to 1931. She lived in poverty during this time. She had no work and lived with a dirt floor, unfortunately. And it is also said that she was loose with men during this time, which I was kind of like, okay, thanks FBI for giving me that information. Like,
thanks for the really pertinent info.
Yeah, like, okay, she's lonely. She's sad. Like,
right. I mean,
give her a break.
That's not a criminal activity.
No.
That's not, you know, it's not sex work, which was, you know, fully illegal and criminalized. So,
yeah.
It's just having boyfriends. Who cares?
Exactly. speaking of boyfriends, she kind of got herself one. She began living with this guy named Arthur Dunlop. He was also not great. He didn't have a job. And he was kind of like a lowlife, but this kind of turned her life around a little bit. And then when her son Fred was released from jail, that really like brightened her day. So this was like years of just like living in sadness and probably depression and poverty for her. And now her son's out and he's going to take care of her.
So, and he's the last surviving child.
No. So Fred's in jail. So Fred was, he just got out of prison. Mm-hmm. Lloyd and Arthur are still in prison serving for crimes. Oh, they're still in prison. Yes. Right. Yes.
And then the other one died.
The other one is the one that like
suicide by cop, basically.
He committed a murder, got away, crashed, and then was like, I'm not going to jail, and then he killed himself, which is unfortunate. Right. But yes, that's that guy. Herman. Yeah.
Herman.
So he died, like, he was the oldest, and he died in a kind of crazy way.
Mm-hmm.
Had to be kind of shocking for the mother, but, you know, that's what happens when you're running robberies.
Yeah, leading a life of crime.
Mm-hmm. It's a dangerous one. We got bright horizons. Fred's out of prison. Ma's,
boy, oh boy.
Her bright and shining boy is gonna lead the way in getting them a better life. Now, going to prison, I'm sure back then was even worse than the conditions that are now. However, our criminal system is still messed up, but obviously Fred didn't learn his lesson by going to prison. It probably made it worse and made him more motivated to commit more crimes and bigger ones, which is exactly what he did. He formed an alliance with Alvin Carper, which I don't know if you've heard of him.
No.
I'll get more into what he's about, but he was, I think, a prison mate of Fred, and Fred was like, let's form an alliance, and boom, they formed the Barker Carpus gang.
Nice.
So these guys are not great guys. They're just ready to be outlaws, you know. Get that money. And, you know, talking to each other, and they're like, hey, man, let's make this crime dream happen. And the first stop that they had was killing a sheriff in Missouri. So isn't that nice? So then Ma was deemed an accomplice, and she wanted...
Oh, was she with them?
She wasn't with them, I don't think, during the crime, but maybe she was. I couldn't find any information on that.
Gotcha.
I just know that... I'm sure there's many books and stories about this whole thing that are much better than what I'm telling, but this is, like, in short, she...
Yeah.
They saw her with them, or someone knew that she was with them, or she was, like, staying with them, so they called her an accomplice,
right,
and
right.
There was a wanted poster put up for her, and it said, Old Lady Ari Barker on it.
That's funny.
It is good to know that, like, I think her born, like, the name that she was born with was Arizona.
Oh.
Arizona Donnie Clark.
So not Kate.
I know. I say Kate because it's like, she's got like 20 names. Not 20 names, but.
Aliases.
Arizona Barker. Ari Barker. Ma Barker. She was born Clark.
Old Lady Barker.
Yeah, exactly. Old Lady. And I'm like, she's not even that old at this time. I guess she's about 50s in this time.
Well, I guess for back then, too, the, you know.
Yeah, I guess people are, like, older faster then, yeah, because you die sooner.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so that's not good for anybody that's involved in this crime. They know that they're looking for Old Lady Ari Barker. So mm-hmm. They decide to leave Missouri, and they take Ma and Arthur Dunlop, her boyfriend, not the son. The son's still in prison. And they travel under fake names.
Mm.
Speaking of Arthur's, like I said, Arthur's in prison. Her son, he just got released from prison. So they decide to have a family reunion. Not really a family reunion, but more so like, all right, let's get to some crime.
Let's get the gang back together.
Exactly. Basically. Essentially, the gang moved to Chicago, and they were there for a tiny bit of time, and then they decided to leave because Karpis, the guy that I told you about that was roomies or cell, not, I don't even know if they were cellmates. But anyways, he was like, yeah, no, I don't really want to work for Al Capone, and he's running Chicago, so let's leave.
Wow.
So yeah,
they're like they don't want to get involved and so they can't be in Chicago.
Yeah, I think honestly I feel like it was kind of a control thing. They didn't want to be a gang under a gang,
right?
Like, they want to be their own
crime in Chicago, you gotta do it
with Al Capone. yeah, so they were like, nah, we're gonna do our own thing. I'm sure they would have to give, like, a cut to Al Capone, and, like, there's a network, and maybe that would be good, but also it could be end really bad, from what I know with gang stories. The little family traveled to Minnesota, and that's where they were able to complete a lot of crime and graduate from robbery to kidnapping people and holding them for ransom.
Uh-oh. Oh my god.
And while they were in Minnesota, they were able to form an alliance with police chief, the St. Paul's police chief, Thomas Big Tom Brown.
Corruption,
who knew? Yep, and so he protected them a lot and gave them tips and helped them do all this stuff. And I think it was his idea to start kidnapping people as well. They're like, he was like, yeah, you should start doing that because that's easier for me to coordinate than robbery.
So just kidnapping random people?
No, like rich people. Like,
Jesus, what a crazy time to be rich. Can you fucking imagine? Because, you know, the American government had no, like, control on that, you know, because nowadays that, like, never happens. People do not get held for ransom unless they're, like, a political hostage or something.
Exactly,
like, overseas. The fucking rich people being scared to walk the streets because they might just get kidnapped by a bunch of fucking thugs and held for ransom. And then it worked constantly. They would just be like, okay, I guess we're going to pay you money.
Exactly.
And they didn't get caught.
I know. That's and my so thing, too, funny. Is like the whole thing with the bank robberies, like, shit out of luck if your bank gets robbed because that is not insured. Like, your money is not insured.
You're not, no, they're not getting, they're gone. They're across the state lines. There's nothing.
Yeah, they're using the money that they got to do more crime, just like these people. Anyways.
That is so crazy.
It's wild. I feel like I haven't really dove deep into the mob and gang history, even though it's very fascinating. I've been more into, like, you know me, like, history, lighter history. Yeah. And, like, even though I love a good true crime, I just never have really in-depth researched all of the gangs that were happening at this time. And it, like, the story makes me want to, like, get a book or something, honestly.
Right.
It's, there's so much to it, and there's all these, like, interweaving things that you wouldn't even think about. Yeah, I'll tell you about Karpis in a little bit. So they're doing all this stuff, and this family, the Barker Karpis gang, is pretty, like, well known. They weren't, like, one of the best gangs, but they also are, like, very dotted throughout this time period. Talking about Arthur again, not the son. I'm gonna call him Arthur Dunlop because that's who it is, and he's not a Barker. He's just, like, the boyfriend that's coming along and smooching off the gang. They've been together for a while, and back then and now too, I guess, is that when you're together for so long, you become common law husband and wife. And this guy, he kind of sucks. The gang doesn't really like him, and while the gang was traveling, they offed Arthur Dunlop with a single gunshot wound to the head.
My god, they must have hated him.
So this is why it is said that he was loose-lipped about the gang, and they really thought that he had tipped off the police their whereabouts, which, remember I was talking about how the St. Paul police chief helped them out? He told them that the police were coming. Like, he gave them a tip. So they got out of Minnesota before the cops came. But they blamed the fact that the cops were going to come and get them on Arthur, because they thought that he did it, when in reality he didn't actually do it, which kind of sucks. But
they're paranoid.
Yeah, there was someone who saw a picture of them in True Detective magazine.
Yeah. Dope.
I know.
Can you imagine being that person?
I know. I mean, I would be worried back then. I don't want to be like a, I know, but for me, I'm like, yes, I would tell the police, but I'd be like under a pseudonym. I'd be like, nobody needs to know.
Yeah, who you I can am. Easily do an anonymous tip.
Yeah, but I know, but I just don't want the gangs coming after me, man.
It's yeah, too dangerous. With it.
They're crazy. Anyways, so yeah, they leave Minnesota. They go to Wisconsin, where Ma Barker, like I put Mommy Barker here. She is kept a little further away from the gang, so like she's not hanging out with them as much. She's not like in the back room knitting. Well, I don't know if she knit, but you know, I'm trying to think. I guess I honestly think that they started doing this separation a little more after the Arthur thing, because they thought that he did that. He thought that he told, and so they're like, okay,
maybe
we don't.
She's upset with them for killing him too. Maybe.
Oh, that too. Yeah,
emotions are high.
They're kind of keeping her separate in hotels and lodges apart from the gang around the same area. But like when they're moving, okay, like Ma, let me go get Ma and then we'll move.
Right. Interesting.
And I guess they wanted her to know less about the crime stuff. And it's also rumored that the other crime gals and wives and girls and whatever they had in the gang were not a fan of Ma, and I think she was not a fan of them either, so it kind of worked out. They're like,
it's okay. Kind of like the old mother-in-law, like.
Yeah. Like she's probably nagging on them.
That's so funny.
But also, yeah, from quotes and stuff that I've seen, it seems, despite a lot of what has been talked about her like running these kids and like starting this gang, it's actually quite the opposite. She's just kind of like a back burner person in this whole thing. She's just like passively letting everything happen. She wasn't like an amazing leader to all this, but I'll explain that a little later. Back to the good stuff. Finally, after a little bit of time in Wisconsin, the gang goes back to Minnesota, where they did two of their biggest jobs yet. They obtained $100,000 ransom for the kidnapping of a businessman named William Ham, which is fun.
It's so crazy. It's so fucking crazy.
Yes, I know. But here's the cool part. Cool part is that it's starting to unravel this whole scheme. They began the process of kidnapping another man because they're like, wow, that was great. That was easy. We just kidnapped him. He gave us 100 grand. Like, we cool, let's do it again, but 200 grand. Why did I say 2,000? 200 grand. I feel like that's not the right voice to do, but
Hey! I got you. Here we go.
I'm ready.
You gotta give us the money, man.
I don't know. I love
that's
that.
That's my...
What he said.
Yeah, exactly. Don't make me shoot ya. Okay, I'm going like a little bit too more like that's the Bob that's girlfriend. That's the mob girlfriend.
Oh yeah, that's like,
you tell him, boss.
Make sure you're home for dinner. I don't care what you boys do. Yeah, I don't know. That wasn't right either. Whatever.
Anyways.
So they're like, okay, we're gonna start doing these kidnappings. They're high profile. Like, well, they're not high profile, but they're Big money for one person instead of a bank. So
sure.
They, like I said, they began planning and their next kidnapping of this guy named Edward Bremer. And the fingerprinting thing became a thing. So so that is how everything started to unravel. The FBI connected the Barker Karpus gang to William Ham kidnapping, and therefore the gang was like, deuces, we gotta get out of here because they know we did this. And now the FBI was on the hunt, so they left for Chicago and elsewhere, and that's where everyone goes down to Florida. And I suppose we are kind of back to square one. I don't, not everyone went to Florida. Arthur stayed, and essentially The week before the shootouts, Arthur Doc Barker was arrested in Chicago. So I said not everybody went to Chicago. So he went to Chicago and then he got busted. And gotcha. Some of his associates got busted. And within the search of their apartments and possessions, the FBI found a map of Florida with Lake Ware circled. And this is one of the clues that led them to figure out where Ma and Fred were
hiding.
Wow.
Why did they... So dumb. That was so stupid of them.
Yeah. There is, like, another detail I want to end this whole thing with, but I got a lot more to explain. not explain, but just more information. We're going to throw more information at you. The FBI agents learned that more of the gang members had been at the house in Florida just like 3 days or so before the ambush. Oh, and they had left. So thankfully they left. I don't know if they got a tip.
Well, thankfully for them.
I know, thankfully for them. And then Ma and Fred were left there. So that's why there was only two in the house. And who knows what would have happened. That shootout might have been even crazier if more of the gang members were in the house. Like, how many?
That would have, yeah.
I mean, they lasted pretty long.
They might have won.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Considering they lasted 5 hours?
Yes.
If there was a whole gang of people up in there, you think that small town police force plus,
well,
I guess,
no,
they
were agents, yeah. Like, right, it right. wasn't, like, I don't even know what cops were there. I don't know the
Still,
whole story.
Considering how long they lasted, I'm like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's crazy.
Here is the summary of all the criminal acts that the Barker-Karpus gang committed between 1931 and 1935. We've got murder, robbery, murder, robbery, 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 three murders, four murders, robbery, kidnapping, robbery, murder, attempted murder, murder, and planning to kidnap. Oh, they also kidnapped. I missed that one before that, but yeah, that's a oh. lot of stuff. And there was stuff before that, obviously, before they formed the gang, but this is essentially... whatever. There's there's a lot of arrest. There's some gang members that were killed. There was a bunch of stuff. You can look it up yourself, because
yeah, because that didn't happen in Florida, and yep. we don't care about it if it didn't happen
exactly
in Florida.
But you could need to know. This is they're not messing around, and that's why the FBI were after them for all that list of things.
Wow.
So I guess before I get into the other stuff I want to talk about, that has, I guess, a little bit more relation to the story that took place in Florida and the end of the Barker-Karpus gang, I did want to say that Karpus, in my research, somehow he continued to do some gang stuff. And he ended up going to Alcatraz, where he was, like, there for a very long time. He wrote wow. a book. Before all this, like I said, the fingerprinting thing started. The gang members started having, like, their fingerprints removed. And he's, like, one of those people that did that. Yeah, it's crazy. So you definitely should look up this guy. His name is Alvin. How could I forget that
name? And the
name?
Chipmunks?
Alvin and the Carper.
Alvin
Carper. He's kind of creepy. I think his nickname, you know how like mobsters have nicknames. It was like Creepy Carper. So
shut up.
No, I saw it. It's on the Wikipedia page.
That's funny. It sucks to be him. That's a bad
I know,
nickname.
But he wrote a book and like, I don't know, he got out of jail eventually. Like, it's weird. Anyways.
Oh.
Oh, and then he died in Spain. The end.
In Spain?
Yeah, he was living in Spain after he left Alcatraz. He was like in Alcatraz, but he also went to this other penitentiary in Washington State, and he met a young Charles Manson there, and they had like some sort of like friendship, which is weird. Okay, anyways, so for all my true crime people, that was your little plug. But back to the next part that I want to talk about, and that is the aftermath, or I guess you could say the beginning of so many other things that happened and were inspired by the story, even though it was the end of a long string of crimes committed by the Barker-Karpus gang. And like I said, it was kind of like the end of the Barker-Karpus gang when Fred Barker, the like ringleader of it all, like died, and so did Ma.
Yeah.
Rip. Not rip. Because things were bad. I don't know. They died. Yeah, so books, movies, and TV influence.
Oh my god. I can imagine.
Yeah. The list is very, very long. I'm just going to start spouting off stuff that was inspired by this character that Ma Barker represented. And also this giant shootout. There was a 1940s film, Queen of the Mob, based on Barker. There was, in the film White Heat, the character Ma Jarrett was based on her. There was a TV series called Gangbusters where Ma was interpreted as being, you know, that mob mom that controlled everything. Guns Don't Argue is another docudrama. Ma Barker and her boys in a TV series called The Untouchables. And a lot of things. I'm gonna still go. FBI Story starring Jimmy Stewart. Lorraine Tuttle played Ma Barker in a film called Ma Barker's Blood Killer Brood, which is like really like trying to be the story, but it's not because
right,
it's not true. but it's definitely like a big movie.
But I could see how like the media would latch onto that since she had been arrested as an accomplice and she's an older woman. They're like, oh, you know, like even at the time, I'm sure like that made the story even more interesting because it's because she's, I mean, it is crazy that she's out there on the road with them.
Yes.
There's no reason for her to be out there on the road. I mean, I guess because she's financially dependent on them, but like they could send her money in the mail or something. Like,
yeah.
It's very interesting. It's hard to know what was really going on because
exactly yeah can't. that's what I pulled from all of my research because I went into it being like, oh my god, there's some like badass mother that's coordinating a whole gang and
right, female Al Capone.
Yes, exactly. So like everyone is drawn to that and the fact that there is no actual evidence to back that up, but the media and TV and books and all kinds of things have pulled this from this character inspiration and kind of gone wild with it is like mind-blowing to me. You can go on Wikipedia and see all the list of all the stuff. There's way more. One of my favorite things that I want to share with you, Karina, and I think we can play for our listeners is the fact that a character called Ma Parker was a villain in the 1960s Batman series. And it is hilarious. Like, oh not my God. So I have to play this for you. And yeah, let's set that up.
Oh my God.
Man Cave Movie Reviews. Thank you for this video, for this compilation. So that's her.
All right, boys, let's relieve these ladies of a few extra pounds.
The earrings. The ring. The money in the purse. Go on, boys.
It's really funny.
It's Mom funny. It's
Parker and her boys in Gotham City.
They've terrorized almost every other city in the country, but they've never operated in our fair metropolis before.
Batman, a crisis. The infamous Ma Parker has
invaded Parker. That's so stupid.
You just eat your supper, boys. I'll take care of them.
I like that she is like dressed up as a granny, basically.
All alone, trying to raise my little brood the best I know how. I didn't mean any harm. Oh, don't shoot, officer! Don't shoot this old gray hand!
Oh my God, she is killing it though. This actress is going hard, dude.
Come on, hand it over.
Yeah.
It's like almost $3,000, Ma.
I mean, it is a great role. It's clearly also being played by a younger woman.
Yep.
Because they couldn't help themselves.
The mistake ever to come to Gotham City.
Oh my God, this show is
what's going
dope.
On
we're taking over your prison.
This part gets me.
I've been planning this for months. One by one, I've been substituting members of my gang for your guards, and now the prison belongs to us.
This is so stupid.
I know.
meddling tape crusader. Go tell him to take a bat jump in Gotham Lake. At last, Batman and Robin in my power. Mama always knows best.
Ma Parker, I don't care about myself, but in the name of decency, I ask you to spare the life of Robin.
Very, very touching.
Oh, my God, she's amazing.
Well, Ma, I hope you've learned your lesson at last.
Have pity, Batman, on a poor mother. I didn't mean any harm. I was just trying to make my children happy.
Look out, Batman! Looking for this, Ma? I took the precaution of removing it from your hair during the fight.
You're very clever, Batman. It isn't easy to foil the greatest mother of them all.
The greatest mother of them all. Happy Mother's Day.
Yes, and it's funny that because Mother's Day just passed. But
yeah, great timing.
I thought that was pretty hilarious. Like,
yeah, no, that's incredible.
it's kind of, I don't know. I feel bitter sweet about it because I really enjoy the fact that this Batman character is one of like the funniest things I've seen in a while.
Yeah, and it makes me want to watch the show.
Yes, I want to.
But I'm like, there's no way this show is actually good. Like,
no, yeah, it's definitely
mostly bad, but it's probably
it's
fun.
It's a lot of it's outdated jokes and stuff, but I mean, yeah. It's still I think it's funny. Anyways, like I've been saying this whole time, most of these movies and characters that were inspired by Ma have little to no facts to back up her personality. In fact, right. She did not organize her son's criminal activity that we know of. We don't know what happened in their house. We didn't know if she like encouraged them or was just like passive about it. You know.
Right.
But it's just another example, you would say, about how the media likes to portray women in a negative way. And obviously this is more cinematic, this idea of this powerful woman being a villain is more exciting to watch than watching what actually was going on. And maybe there was some abuse involved. Like, who knows? We don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they murdered her husband or her boyfriend anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And
that's a bummer.
Yes, she was like the mother of some pretty terrible people. But yeah. The evidence isn't there. It can't be proved that she was a super female, matriarchal mastermind behind all of it. Most likely she was just passively along for the ride. Her children were obviously horrible criminals and she went along with it. Her sons were her life and she was wrong for letting them do all the terrible things that they did. I mean, they were adults, but...
They're adults. Yeah. I mean, who knows? It's so hard to say, like, with historical figures like that, because unless you have, like, a bunch of correspondence or something like that, like, there's no way to get into their mindset and their psyche, you know? You just don't know what it was like. All you can do is speculate.
Exactly. And I feel like we talk about this all the time on the podcast when we just talk about crazy murderers, and there's a lot of context that goes into why they turn to whatever. Sometimes it's just madness and it's never going to be right to murder someone, but people who commit crimes have pasts that we cannot even like begin to relate to.
Yeah, it's interesting. She lived a crazy life. She really did. Even if she was even if she never picked up a gun.
Exactly. That's a crazy life. Yeah, she never went to prison or anything. And yet she was kind of confined. I'm going back to what I was talking about in the beginning. So Ma and Fred were confined when the FBI cornered them in their home. And there's this other idea that maybe Ma herself was entrapped in her family dynamic. You know, it brings all these questions to my mind. Had she seen what happened to traitors and worried that her sons or her son's gang would... obviously turn on her, they did on her boyfriend,
if she tried to leave
her common-law husband. Had she been afraid of her own sons, or had her sons threatened her? She clearly was battered by the life that she had lived, those years that she lived in depression without her family. You know, her sons were in jail, one of them committed suicide. She was very, very poor, and she had all these relationships with strangers because probably she was lonely. We don't really actually know what this woman was like, and
yeah,
she could have been coordinating the whole thing, and she was just really good about it, and her sons protected her. So who knows? Do you have any questions about this, Karina? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. It's fun to speculate. You know, without a doubt, she's a very interesting figure in crime history.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm inclined to say, like I kind of said before, like, why go with them? You know, why involve yourself to that degree? My thoughts are that she was involved. You know, it's fun to think that she was the mastermind. It's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible. Who knows?
Yeah, the possibility is there. It's like that loyalty. You never know, like, the true loyalty between, like, a family unit. Sometimes it's like secrets go to the grave.
Yeah.
And this, like, that's kind of what happened here. Like, we only know what from the FBI's perspective. And
yeah,
I suppose this mobster type mother that, like, movies and TV has embraced makes for, like, a more laughable story. And instead, yeah, like, nobody really wants to watch the movie of a woman who's confined to the life she's experienced and the choices she made and the decisions of her children. Honestly, I would watch that, though, but
honestly, that sounds dope.
Yeah, but that's, like, the cool thing about it is, like, I feel like I need to see more stories of this where there's, like, the surface level characters that you see in media that are, like, in the Batman show, the Ma Parker, like, she's yeah. just like the world's greatest mother, but she's also, like, just a criminal mastermind. We don't see any of that, like,
yeah,
dark stuff. Maybe she, yeah, what's the backstory, lady?
It definitely feels like there could be a really good, like, Coen Brothers movie about it.
Oh yeah.
Not even, like, one of their comedies, but, oh, like, yeah. No Country for Old Men.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, you know, not one of their straight comedies, but something like that where...
Like a dark comedy.
I just love their movies. Because it's like a modern Western.
Yeah.
Like you said, this character of Ma Parker and, like, the choices that she makes and the repercussions for those choices.
Mm-hmm.
And the people around her. It's just really interesting. I would love to see that.
I'm here for it. Yeah. If we want something more, I mean, it's not really obtainable to go travel and visit these things right now, but the original place where events happened or the events mm-hmm. unfolded, the land has been sold, but the actual house is still intact. They used, I think, like a pontoon boat or something to transfer the whole house.
Mm, right.
So they moved the house to Kearney Island Recreation and Conservation Area. That's down there in what am I gonna say? The Waka Chaka Chaka? That's
Ukawaki?
Oklawaha.
There we go.
Oklawaha.
Oklawaha.
Yes. Yeah, so you can go visit the actual house. They've turned it into a museum. I'm pretty sure you can't visit it right now in quarantine, but
yeah,
eventually it'll be open. And this was something that the town has held on to. This is a story that has kind of defined a lot of the... I mean, if you go to the town's Wikipedia page, it just has that as a whole section, and that's pretty much the whole page. Like, this is, like, a big event for them, and I think they do a reenactment of the shootout every year, which would be
so cool
to, like,
but I'm see. Sure it doesn't last 5 hours.
No, I'm right? sure it'll be, like, a half-hour show.
Yeah, that's cool.
So I'm kind of wanting to do that, especially since it's so close. And then if we go and do that, Karina, like, I feel like we have to go to this restaurant, which is called Gator Joe's. I don't know why I said that in a weird way. But essentially, Gator Joe is the name of a large alligator that lived in Lake Ware. And it's said that There was letters sent from Ma to her son who was in jail. Or maybe he wasn't in jail. Anyway, she sent letters to her son and she talked about Gator Joe. And that detail helped them locate them. Like, it's one of the facts. God. Yeah, so they've I guess when they took his letters and they found that she was talking about Gator Joe.
That's crazy.
We got to go to Gator Joe's because it's a restaurant. I guess it's called Gator Joe's Beach Bar and Grill. And it's on the water on Lake Ware. Where? Is it where? On Lake Ware.
Where is it?
On Lake Ware. In Ocklawaha. Yeah. So you can go eat lunch at the Gator Joe's Beach Bar and Grill on their
Lakeside Beach, I guess. Yeah. I would not count that as a beach.
They on their website, it's a Key West style.
Uh-oh.
Key West style restaurant. Far from Key West. I know, it's a style restaurant, I guess. I completely don't like those usually, but I feel like this one is very special and I need to go to it.
Yeah. It's a part of the experience.
Yeah, and on their website they talk about the Ma Barker house, you know. So anyways, now that I'm leaving off on kind of a more fun tone, that's
yeah.
That's the Ma Barker house, everybody.
Awesome. Great job.
Thank you.
What a crazy story. I didn't know anything about it. Like, I only know, like, Ma Barker was a criminal involved with the mob. Like, I didn't know.
Yeah.
The cross-country
crimes.
Crime spree they went on. And
yeah.
The shootout at the end. That's wild.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this. So, like, in one of our past episodes, I talk about the fact that Ma Barker, she looks like the character in the Goonies, but actually the character in the Goonies is one of those things that inspired.
It's based off of her.
Based off of her. Because it is true. It's like two sons and.
Yeah, of course. That makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense.
So anyways, leaving it with that little tidbit.
Awesome.
Yeah. So if you can, go review us on Apple Podcasts. That's something that we forget to tell you all the time.
Yeah. But
if you already have...
on socials.
If you already have, thank you so much. And if you haven't, please.
And I mean, honestly, yeah. We read all the emails that people send us. And if you have an idea for something, send it our way.
Yeah. We love...
Follow us on Insta.
Yeah. We love keeping contact, even though we're all distancing.
Yeah, help. Let's put the social into social distancing.
Yeah, like we haven't done that enough already. We need to do it more.
Okay, it's over.
It's over. Stop listening.
See ya later.
See ya next time. See ya for dinner, Ma Parker. Alright, oh actually God. Though, bye, stop bye. Listening.
All the music for our podcast is provided by The Murmurs and their album Get Swell Soon. You can listen to The Murmurs on Spotify or find them on their Bandcamp page.
If you're interested in learning more about us, you can visit our website at peninsulaobscura.com and check out our Instagram at peninsulaobscura. You can listen to our podcast on most platforms, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts.